You are listening to a digitally remastered class of HaRav Yochanan Zweig, Rosh HaYeshiva of the Talmudic University of Florida. This class is from the Robert L. and Rhoda Lipton Foundation Audio Library. For more information, please call 305-534-7050, or you can visit our website at www.talmudicu.edu. October 1, 18.
I'd like to begin with, I think, a very interesting question. The Rambam writes in the laws of Avodah Zarah, the laws of idolatry, the following historical fact. That Avraham Avinu, after he knew of God's existence, he went ahead and he started discussing with people, and in a fairly short time, he was able to get tens of thousands of people get closer to believe in one God, monotheism. He doesn't say this, but we know this to be true. There was a man who lived before Avraham Avinu by the name of Noah. He built an ark for 120 years. And he had a very interesting message to the people of his times. You better change your behavior, or else that God is going to destroy the world. That he's very earnest about this, we know, because he's working 120 years with his family to build an ark. So he certainly, we know he's very sincere. Secondly, in last week's parsha, the Torah describes Noah as a tzaddik tamim, as a perfectly righteous human being. So he's a great human being. He's a very sincere person. How many people is he able to convince in 120 years? Zero. People, when it came to come into the ark, nobody. In 120 years of work, not one single solitary person was convinced by this perfectly righteous, sincere person. How do we understand that? What is the insight over here? I think it's a very powerful, compelling question. The Talmud tells us that actually for 120 years he criticized the people of his generation. It's in Tractate Sanhedrin 1:8a, and he told them there's going to be serious problems if we don't change our ways. Why was he totally unsuccessful? And Avraham, in this week's parsha, we find his success. Have an insight that I think will not only to answer this question, but may be extremely helpful in our personal lives and how to deal with our families, that I think could be very, very helpful. Let's begin here with page 118, Harashi. The Torah here is, I'm taking just in the middle, the opening sentences. Hashem told Avraham to move from where he grew up, from his father's home, his country of origin, he should move to the land of Israel. And the Torah tells in sentence 4 that Avraham went, and with him was Lot. And then the Torah says that in 5, Avraham took with him his wife Sarai, his nephew Lot, and all the property that they had acquired in their homeland. They came with their entire wealth. Vesanefesh asher osu b'charon, and the souls they made in Haran. He took the people. Let's take a look. Rashi explains, what does that mean? They are said to have made souls, for they took them in under the wings of the Almighty. Abraham converted the men, and Sarah would convert the women. And the Torah considers that as if they made them. It's a very interesting interpretation. That they left their native homeland with all their wealth, family, part of their family, and also all these people that they had inspired. all the people that they are inspired, they also left with. I have just one question. Let's see what the sentence says, and let's see what the rabbis said. The sentence says, HaNefesh, the people, Asher Osu, that they did. The word they is a plural pronoun. The verb did or made is also plural. So if it says that what Abraham and Sarah did and uses one verb to describe what they did, how would you think they did it? Abraham and Sarah, they did, these are the people they made. How would we understand that sentence? The people they made. How would we understand that? They made together. That's what the rabbis come, a whole new story. No, Abraham dealt with the men, Sarah dealt with the women. You know, that's not the only form of kiruv that's possible. They could be working together. They could have worked on families together, not necessarily individuals. Where did the rabbis come to take it out of this simple context of the sentence that Abraham dealt with the men and Sarah dealt with the women? How do we know that to be true? What is the Torah telling us? What are the rabbis telling us when the Torah didn't seem to tell us? Those are two questions. First question we're trying to understand is how come Noah did not, in 120 years of a great deal of work and effort, didn't amount, it wasn't able to inspire one solitary human being to be a to begin following the Noahide laws. And Abraham was able to motivate tens of thousands. It needs some kind of explanation. What was Noah's message? What was Abraham's message? Talmud tells us that Noah did what I think all of us do. He criticized the people of his generation and told them, God is going to destroy the world. It's not just, I'm telling you, doing it. There's consequences to your action. Which is, we have a child who wants to do, act a certain way in our house. What's the first thing we tell them?
Don't do it.
It's my house. This is my house. This is my house. You want a dog? You do that in your house. My house, we don't have dogs. You want to go to bed a certain time? You do that in your house. My house, these are the rules. These are the rules. Is that a good way to deliver a message? What's that message to the child?
He doesn't know.
Well,
he doesn't know.
He's a guest in your house. He doesn't have any real rights over here, any real privileges over here. Everything that he has is you're bestowing on him. It happens to be true. You do pay his tuition, you do feed him, and you do house him, and you clothe him. It all is true. However, that's not a message that anybody wants to hear. And because he doesn't have the wherewithal to live on his own, he swallows that message. I think it builds a good feeling. Resentment. But I just can't help it. Right now, my father has to pay my bills. I don't want to move out on the street. But it's not an uplifting, it's not a message that empowers a person. It's a message that puts a person down. You are nothing. You don't have any rights. Everything you have is from me. That's the message you're telling us on. That happens to be true about the world also. We don't have any real rights to do what we want here. Hashem gave us free choice, but he set up 7 Noahide laws. There's laws of common decency, of common morality, your behavior, how you have to. I don't want to hear about murder in this world. I don't want robbery in this world. I don't want adultery in this world. This is not a world that you do what you want. It's my world. You don't have any rights. Free choice means you have the ability to do right or wrong, and if you make the right choices, I'll reward you. But it doesn't mean you have the right to do what's wrong. You don't have any rights here. This is my world. That was the message that Noah was delivering. You know how most people react to that message? You know what? I'd rather do what I want and die than live that way. 120 years of work, there wasn't one person that bought into that message. Not absolutely one person. In fact, Adam already told us the human condition. God tells Adam, I don't want you eating from this tree. Because, and the day you eat on this tree, I'm going to kill you. Adam knows it's true. The day he eats on the tree, he's going to be killed. God has told him directly. And what does Adam do? He eats on the tree. I don't want to be controlled. Nobody wants to be controlled. Nobody wants to hear that you can't do, that you have to do what I want. Nobody wants to hear that. In fact, I'm sure had God told Adam, you know what? There's this tree that if you eat this tree, it's a poison that kills you. And there's a big skull, a crossbones, the international symbol of poison on this tree. I guarantee it. You think Adam would have eaten from that? Did Adam desire to jump off the Alps? He didn't have any desire. No one's self-destructive. But God isn't saying here that this is poison. This is not something that's going to kill you. You know what's going to kill you? Because you didn't listen to me. I'd rather die than be able to do what I want than listen to you. And that's the human condition.
But you also said no one is self-destructive.
I didn't say nobody is self-destructive.
You said that.
Nobody is self-destructive when the issue is on his own behavior. For no reason. A sick person, no one wants to go and jump off the Empire State Building. Control? 100%. I'd rather die than be controlled. That was Noah's message, and he didn't have one in here. It's very fascinating. The Rambam tells us a very interesting thing. You know what Adam, Abraham was preaching? He should have been preaching. There's 7 Noahide laws. Adultery. Guys, we've got to clean ourselves up. The Rambam writes twice, and I tell you, I learned that Rambam at least 100 times until last Shabbos. I didn't see what he was saying. I didn't realize what he was saying. What he was telling, what Adam told, Abraham's message was, you should serve God. You should bring sacrifices to God, wine libations to God. You should prostrate yourself under God. No, you should serve God. Is that one of the 7 Noahide laws? Is there any obligation? There's no obligation to set Noahide laws to serve God. Don't kill. Don't rob. No adultery. Don't curse God. No robbery. A judicial system. And don't eat animals don't pull off limbs from animals when they're still alive and eat them. Nothing about serving God. A Gentile, to be a full Noahide observant person and to have a share in the world to come. You do not have to go once to church, not on Sundays, not even Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. Not once, you don't have to go ever to church. You never have to pray. All you have to do is don't do things that destroy the social order. Why isn't Abraham talking about the social order? Because he understood clear from Noah that you put people down, you're not going to do anything. It's not going to do any good. What you have to do is key in to a person's sense that he can be great. He can attach himself. He can become part of the universe. He can be part of he who is everything. There's only one God and everything came from him. There's nothing else other than him. And you can be connected to him. The message is you can be great. Not the message is you're nothing and I'm the boss and you have no rights. The message is you can be great. You know, we're finite people. God invites us to connect him. God invites us to feel part of his infinity, to attach ourselves to him. And that doesn't talk about the Noahide laws. That's about serving him. That was the message that Avram was delivering. And how was he delivering that message? Through, the Rambam says, he was discussing with people and come back to that in a second. You know what his main message was? He was a role model. He wasn't proselytizing. He wasn't telling people, join me, I know the truth. He was first and foremost a role model. Abraham was not telling people, join me, I know truth, join my club, join me. As unfortunately, a lot of us, even Jews, when we try, we welcome them into our midst. It's not about people joining us who know the truth. It's about dealing with each person according to their issues. Does this fit for you? You have problems? These are solutions. He says clearly twice the Rambam. Every discussion he had with a person was according to that person's needs. He answered everybody according to his needs. It wasn't about join me, I know truth. It was a huge amount of respecting people. He's interacting with people. And you know how he did that? He was a first and foremost a role model. How do I know that? That's what Rashi's saying. Sarah and Abraham were not in the business of kiruv, of bringing people in, of let's talk people into things. They were in the business of being the role model. And a role model for a man is a man. A role model for a woman is a woman. They were role models. And in being role models, they were interested and they set a standard of people, and they weren't just role models who could observe. They were role models who you could talk to, who discussed your issues, your questions, and gave you understanding according to who you were. Not join me, I know truth, which unfortunately, you know, even a lot of our people that are in Kiruv is join our club. Join our club. Yeah, if you want to become one of us, you have salvation. No, I'd like to be religious. I'd like to, instead of becoming, I don't want to use any names here, but instead of becoming, you know, joining the yeshiva, I want to join a Hasidic club. That's Kiruv. I want to join a Sephardi club. I want to join the... Well, you know, we don't really have time for you guys. It's join us. It's not about joining us. It's about each person finding his way to the truth. And that was what they were helping for. And they were role models. And each person was answered and discussed according to his needs. But the main thing, and this I think is the really... if you're a role model and you're trying to deal with a person, help him through his issues, how he can reach some kind type of conclusion, how do you deliver that message? And let's talk in the house. I'm having a discussion with my wife. Of course, I'm right here, of course, and I'm trying to explain to her, and I convinced her. I'm strong, and I keep on emotionally, you know, hammering it again. Understand she does this stuff, right, guys? It's not about that at all. We have to imagine ourselves one thing. Imagine ourselves as a role model. That's not what it's about. That's about persuasion. That's about, I guess in some things you could even call that brainwashing, a dominant personality, imposing themselves on a lesser personality. What it's really about is imagine yourself when you're talking to your wife, that somebody's watching you. When you're talking to your child, imagine that somebody's watching you. The way you're telling your child, we don't do it this way, you do it that way. Just have that image in your head. And how will that person say to himself, would I like to parent like you, or would I not like to parent with you? Do I think that's a good example of how to deal with the child? If that becomes the thing, is that the way you should deal with my, is that the way I'd like to deal with my wife? Do I think that's the right way to do it? Am I a role model for that? If that remains the litmus test of my head, then when I actually start talking is in a nice way, in a pleasant way, in a non-controlling way, and first and foremost, in a respectful manner. So, hey, that's a very nice thing. When you hear a person browbeating somebody, even if it's with good arguments and convincing somebody, is that something that inspires anybody to emulate? Is that a role model for anything? Which is really a Mishnah. What I'm really saying to you is a Mishnah. It's really a question that was asked by the philosophers of the 18th century started with, or the end of the 17th century. Everybody deals with one question. There's a whole slew of philosophers dealing with one question. When a person has a moral issue, how should you solve moral issues? Is there any rule of thumb that can tell us, I have a moral dilemma, I would like to do the right thing. How should I figure out what the right thing is? You know, none of us are that learned that we can answer every moral question. Is there some rule of thumb that we're able to, you know, instinctively do the right thing? They say over, my Rosh Hashiva used to say over from Rabbi Chaim Brisker, one of the great thinkers of the modern Talmudists of the 19th century, revolutionary, actually. Now, I don't believe it's true, but I just want to say, he used to say like this, you know what? You take, examine both issues. Examine both sides of the issue. And then whatever you want to do, you should know that's the wrong thing to do and do the other thing. If you want to do it, you can imagine, I don't know if there's a certain cynicism. I didn't believe that this was ever true. Like, you know, if you want to do it, you understand it's probably selfish and wrong. That was what he used to say. I don't really believe he said it, but there were certainly people that thought he said it. It's a very cynical view of human beings. But I think the answer to this is what the Mishnah tells us. Rabbi Omer, Judah the prince said, Ezehi derech sheyover lo ha'odam. What is the path that a person should choose? Kol shi teferes lo seho. That's something which you feel elevates you. V'teferes lo min ha'odam, which the simple translation means other people will perceive as being a beautiful way to do, act. When a person in his mind always has to, when I'm dealing with you and we're having an argument, and I, of course, I'm right, and I'm, let's say it's a moral issue, or this is the way we have to do it in my home, I'm arguing with my wife. What I have to always keep in mind is, if somebody else was standing watching me, would he consider this to be something he would want to emulate, something he would want to identify with? That's what Rebbe is saying. Rebbe is saying that you have to have your own feelings that it's good, but that's not, it's not enough about being right. It's not about delivering the message of right. It's about delivering a message that other people will think is an appropriate way to deal. Because most of us feel when we're right, I can raise my voice, I can scream, I can insult because I have the might of right on my side. It's not about being right. What it's about is being appropriate respect for another human being. I think it's a huge insight for us. Most of us feel we have to be, where I'm right, of course, I feel like that. You know, I get motivated. I mean, right, I'm on a crusade. I'm a kanoi. I'm a zealot. I'm selling right. But the Mishnah is telling us we don't sell right. Right doesn't give me a license to pound it into somebody. It doesn't give me a license to put somebody down, to be demanding, because it's right. Moral right. It has to be something that is the teferes lo min ha'odam, that somebody else looks at this and feels motivated to emulate that. That's what Chazal are telling us what Avraham Avinu's kirov was. The kirov of Avraham Avinu was, he discussed everything, but his behavior was a behavior that people wanted to identify. Let's see somebody having an argument and raising his voice and finally convincing somebody else, yes, you're a sinner and you have to change. How do I feel as a bystander? Do you think I want to do that? I'm probably very sympathetic for the person who's not as intelligent getting robbed. Or even if I think he's telling the right message, the arrogance of giving it in such a way because it's right is something that I don't want to do. It's always about doing something that somebody else should be one to emulate. Avram was creating a role model. Tens of thousands of people in a short time can be inspired when a person acts in a way that somebody else wants to identify with. But if I act in a way because I'm right, and therefore, and most, once I'm right, I don't even care what I say, and I don't care how I talk to somebody, and I don't care the disrespect I show the person because I know I'm right. And of course, I'm right, and therefore it's for his good. Yeah, it's not only I'm right, but it's for his good, and therefore when it's for the good, I can shove it down his throat and I can push it on him. That's all right, except for one thing. I'm not acting in a way that anybody else would want to emulate. If we're not doing that, if you're not doing that, you're not a role model for anybody else. And the right moral decision needs two tests. A, you think you're doing the right thing. You feel that it elevates you. And B, somebody else wants to identify with you. That is the way to do a moral decision. Which means it's not about giving the right message. It's about what's right is how you deliver the message is the issue. Not what the message is. I don't know if Marshall McLuhan said exactly that, is it? It's the medium. The medium is the message.
The medium is the message.
I'm not sure what that means. It's how you deliver the message is really what's important. And therefore, the Rambam talks about the respect that he had for everybody. He answered everybody according to their way, and he was a role model. This is what the rabbis are telling us. Sanefesh Asher Osu Bacharim. It is the people that he was able to inspire in a short time because he and Sarah made themselves role models. How do the rabbis know that's what the sentence is saying? Because you can't be successful otherwise. You cannot reach tens of thousands of people unless you create an image of a role model that people want to identify with. And if you have to be a role model, you're going to be a role model for men. Your wife's going to be a role model for women. If it's anything different, that you just can't have his success. We had people who tried it. Righteous people, perfectly righteous people. But they gave a different message. The message is, it's this world, it's not your world, you're unimportant. Anybody want to hear a message like that? Anybody want to identify with a message like that? 120 years, not one person became converted to that thought. And Abraham, in a short time, was able to... The second very important part of the message is, and that's what the Rambam is telling us, it's not about telling a person what's right or wrong. And this is so... I can't imagine a more important message for our children. It's not about telling this is right and that's wrong, even in the most pleasant way. It's about giving a person a vision that he can be great. He did not mention once, I mean, it's literally unbelievable. I want you to observe the Noahide laws. I don't, adultery, no idolatry. It wasn't about that. It wasn't about observing laws. It was telling people they can get close to God. They can elevate themselves. They can feel great. What we have to do is the same thing with our children. We have to give them a vision of their potential. Once a child has a vision, I can be a great doctor, I can be a great this, I can, he buys into that, you could give him, of course, that doesn't happen without good study habits. It doesn't happen if you're running around. It doesn't happen if you're drinking. It doesn't happen if you stay out late because you're not going to have the academic accomplishments to be able to get into medical school. But it doesn't start that this is the rules in the house, so you can be home so you can do your homework. It's given the message of his potential, how he can be great. It has to start, even, we're not talking about what he's obligated, right? There's no obligation to be great. There's literally no obligation. And all Abraham is talking about is you can serve God, you can be great, you can get close to God. There's no high laws here. What about the laws? He understood. And what we have to begin understanding, it all starts with a vision of wanting to be great. If a person has a vision, he wants to be great, he'll do the things that'll make him great. He'll keep away from the things that'll undermine him. But without a vision of who I am and what I can be, there's no moral code. No moral code means anything to anybody. And all you're doing is imposing rules and regulations and putting them down. It starts with, you can be great. That is the message, and that's the only message. Here people are sinners, they're doing many sins. God just destroyed the world, he just scattered people. And Abraham is not talking about Zion mitzvahs. It's literally, he's talking about each person can be great. And he's a role model for that. And he's just doing, and he delivers the message in this respectful way. You can be great. Not join you sinners, join me who knows all the answers, and my wife and family that we're holy, and just join our cult. That's a cult. It's you can be great. I'll help you find your greatness. I'll answer your questions according to who you are. You can be great. The message is you can be great. The seven Noahide laws will follow. If the message is you can be great, and that's, there's no message of greatness, and all you're doing is controlling me, putting me down, making me feel unimportant. That's a loss. That's a lost cause. I think it's an enormous insult to human life, and that's what we have to do in our family. And it has to be true. You can't. There's a child who doesn't have the extra 30 points IQ to be a great academic. Yeah, but I need a son, the doctor. That's not a message for him. It's not true. It has to be true. What is his greatness? What is his potential? They said, when I went to law school, they used to say, A students, they become college professors. B students, they become judges. I don't mean to sell you a judge. C students, they make money. A kid who can make money, you give him that vision, you have tremendous charisma, you'll make a lot of money. He doesn't have the, but he has people skills, will make a lot. You can be so important in the community, you can affect the community. Somebody can write a check and do more than all the professors together. And therefore, you can make money. People like you. Give him the vision of himself. Once he has that vision of himself, then the structure of the Zion mitzvah, the structure of the 613 mitzvahs, is easy. It's not about controlling a person. It's about giving him a vision of himself. Tens of thousands of people in a very short while were literally inspired, changed their way of life because of Avraham Avinu. There's no healthier message than you can be great. I'd just like to add one last thing. There's a question I heard from my Rebbe maybe 30 years ago. And actually they were discussing this week. There was one of the rabbis down from near Israel was discussing with Rabbi Chinowski the question. Nobody knew the answer that he had said. When the Rambam begins his discussion of how people got into idolatry, he begins with the story of Enosh, the generation of Enosh, which was Adam's grandson, that goes like this. He says, people figure there's a God in heaven, and a God in heaven has all these celestial bodies like a king. He wants you not only to respect him, he wants you to respect all his government officials also. And they started bringing sacrifices to the constellations, to all the lower officials. The only problem is after a while they forgot that there's a God. He said, why is the Rambam telling us this? After all these generations came a man by the name of Noah, the world was wiped out, and Noah was perfectly righteous. How do we know what inspired people or caused people to do idolatry afterwards? It has nothing to do with that. Why is he telling us? It's really ancient history, because after all these generations, after 2,000 years, there's one man by the name of Noah. And he's righteous. Okay, and afterwards people did idolatry again, but how do you know it had anything to do with the original mistake, with the original generation? This is a new issue, a new world. And I think the Rambam is telling us something different. What does the Noahide laws require?
There's
one God, and therefore all these things are truth, and therefore add a certain word. Did it require anybody ever to bring a sacrifice? How come the Dor of Enosh started bringing sacrifices? What was it? They wanted to give sacrifice. Well, they made a mistake too, but where did that come from? What is it in the human condition that makes people want to bring sacrifices? They want to feel close. They want to feel close. It means they want to feel great. They want to feel they're connected to He who is everything. What the Rambam is telling us is that looking back at Enosh is where Avraham Avinu understood what the human condition is. You want to motivate people? Go back to the basic human condition. Every human being wants to be great. Every human being wants to feel elevated. He wants to be connected to all of infinity. In fact, the Talmud actually tells him the day that Adam was created, he brought a sacrifice. Cain brought a sacrifice. Abel brought a sacrifice. There's no obligation for that. It is about wanting to feel important, wanting to feel connected to, I guess today they call people today like to hang around rich people. You know, you like to hang around where things are happening, or in South Beach, you want to hang around where the action is. You want to hang around where the stars are. Imagine if you have really an opportunity to be connected to He is the creator of the universe. That's part of the human condition. This is the beginning. Avram's observations of this is what taught him what his message to the world is. You can be great. Not you can observe Noahide laws, you can be great. And he helped everybody find it. You know, people had questions. Is there a God out there? And he answered everybody according to the way they needed to understand how they could relate to God. That's what we have to do in our families too. We have to give our children a vision of being great. And by the way, you can never give a person a vision of great by screaming at it. That's a contradiction. Because when you raise your voice to somebody, what's the message? You're putting them down. You're intimidating. The message I tell you how great you are is by screaming at you. You understand? That's, I mean, this is what we always do. I know it sounds funny. That's what you do.
What do you mean? You could be a great rocket scientist. If you only do your homework and even study, you could be unbelievable. Here, I'm telling you, I'm putting you down, I'm telling you how great. That's not that it has to be respectful. It has to be in a way that you have to be a role model for delivering that message. Somebody watching you that there's a tremendous amount of respect in delivering the message, and delivering the message, not what to do, delivering the message how they can be great. Deliver that message, he's inspired, he feels great, then the framework from which that greatness can be achieved is something which is perhaps in a relatively short while, tens of thousands of people are going to join. Your children are going to feel that they can be great, they have a place, as long as it's a true message of who they can become. The rest of it, if a child has a, you know, some of us decided at a young age, this is what I wanted to do. You think your father had to tell you to do homework? You know, a child who really decided, I want to be a surgeon. Of course, that was Paul's greatest desire from the day he was born. But if there was ever a child who had some kind of great desire from a young, you don't have to tell him what to do. I'm talking about all the things. You don't have to talk about homework. You don't talk about his morality. He knows what he wants to do. You have to give people vision of being great. Once the vision of being great, the rest falls in. When you give the vision of being great, it has to be respect. A, you can't put them down. You have to give the person, you have to be a role model for delivering that message. So I think in our homes, instead of, I'm the boss, this is the way we do it over here, to start. And the main focus of parenting is give the child a vision of what he can become. And then discipline becomes a very minor part of that, because if a child feels he can be something, he's focused on that, and he'll do the things that are, I guess he wants a better example. And I'm always astounded. You know, I try and exercise, a couple times a week. It's look at the kid from the time he's 10 is already exercising hours a day because he wants to be an Olympic swimmer, or the kid who wants to be a great golfer, or the kid, I'm saying even sport. You don't have to tell him not to overeat. I mean, if you can give your kid a vision that he can be Tiger Woods or Tiger Woods' father, that you can be a great golfer, I'm sure he didn't have to. No, you better go to bed on time. He believed he could be great. He can figure out what things are going to take away from that focus. And a star athlete is from the young age, or somebody going to the Olympics. The discipline is unbelievable. But it's not. You can't create discipline. You got to create a vision. Once he has the vision, then the discipline is itself. It becomes easy. I mean, can anybody here imagine to have the discipline needs to do something in the Olympics? Anything, or even to be a great pianist? If he really believes he can do it, the hours and hours of practice, the hours and hours. Discipline is not a function of. It's a consequence of having a vision. Without a vision, there's no such thing as discipline. Noah tried it without the vision, 120 years of failure. Abram started with a vision, and then there's the discipline fell in place. I wish I had a great job.